Hello, and welcome to episode 7 of the Whitefoot Cricket Show, in collaboration with the Cornwall Cricket Board, a podcast all about celebrating Cornish cricket and inspiring Cornish cricketers. And on the subject of inspiring, it doesn't get much more inspiring than Cornwall's famous win against Somerset at the County Ground on the 20th of July. It was a Somerset side that boasted 8 players that would go on to make the starting 11 for their first Royal London Cup game just 5 days later, one of which was of course England spinner Jack Leach. Playing away from home and losing the toss on a blistering hot day, Cornwall, against all the odds, outclassed Somerset in all departments. This week we hear from the man of the hour, Cornwall captain and man of the match, Scott Harvey. He takes us through the game play by play, from morning prep and the toss to field placements, bowling changes and dressing room discussions. He reveals Cornwall's game plan for the run chase and what Scott was thinking and telling the team throughout his innings. We then go inside the changing room as Scott describes his emotions and the atmosphere immediately after the win. We also hear congratulations from two Cornish cricket legends, Tom Sharp and Matt Robbins, and discuss what this win will hopefully do for Cornish cricket in the future. This win over Somerset is the first time in Cornwall's 117-year history that it's beaten a first-class county. It was a truly historic and remarkable achievement. We hope you enjoy hearing all about it. Scott, man of the hour, good to see you again, mate, and thank you for coming on the podcast at pretty short notice.
Hi, Tails. Thanks for inviting me on. It's an absolute pleasure. I've been following your podcast really closely and thoroughly enjoyed it. So hopefully we can have a good 45 minutes to an hour.
Good man. Well, we're talking just 2 days after Cornwall's win against Somerset at the County Ground. So the first question is, has it sunk in yet?
I think it's just starting to sink in, to be honest. I mean, after the game and yesterday, it was all a bit surreal. I was absolutely inundated with calls, text messages, WhatsApp messages, just from loads and loads of people, which was really nice. It's just starting to sink in now, bit back to work and things like that. To have pulled that one off, it's quite special.
Absolutely. Well, we're going to walk through the day play by play, but before we do, I just wanted to start at the very beginning. So Somerset released their team the night before the game. There were a few names in there that were unknown, but there was also a lot of first team talent. So they had Eddie Byram, Ben Green, who was the captain, George Bartlett, Lewis Goldsworthy, and of course, Jack Leach. And then Casey Aldridge, Sam Young and Ned Leonard have all represented England at under 19 level as well. So the Somerset team wasn't short of pedigree. What did you and the lads make of it? Were you expecting stronger, weaker?
No, I think that's roughly what we thought. You know, every time we play Somerset in pre-season friendlies, you know, they never just throw the kids in. They always put a half-decent side out. So we knew we were going to face a tough battle. It would have been nice to for them to have give us our very own Lewis Goldsworthy, but seeing as he's playing every game for them at the moment, I totally get that. So we knew we had a tough battle on our hands.
Well, as it turned out, they needed Lewis Goldsworthy to dig him out of it a little bit, didn't they?
Yeah, they did. And on that, we were obviously happy with our side as well, you know, and we knew deep down if we all performed to our potential, then we could certainly put Somerset under pressure and give them a good game.
Well, moving on to game day, you and the team, I'm assuming, will have travelled up from Cornwall that morning. Maybe a quick pit stop at Clumpton for a McDonald's breakfast, and then onto the county ground for around 9:30. Is that about right?
Well, actually, we travelled up in luxury the night before, and we stayed in a Premier Inn just up the road. I think it was a Harvester breakfast, so it wasn't quite McDonald's, but it was a Harvester, a very well done fry up in the morning. And then, quick stop in the Shell garage to get some water and Lucozade, and onto the county ground. And I mean, what a blistering hot day it was. As soon as we left the hotel in the morning, you know, you were sweating in your shirt and tie. We knew it was going to be certainly a hot one.
Yeah, well, things have improved since my day then, Premier Inn the night before in Taunton. So you mentioned it there, but you arrive, you dump your stuff, get changed, and then you're stepping out onto the county ground. So how was that for an experience?
Yeah, we rocked up quite early. You know, we were there 9 o'clock, quarter past nine, ready for the 11 o'clock start. And, you know, as to be expected, all the Somerset lads were out in the cages warming up and slinging to their batsmen. And a few of our lads said, you know, I wonder if their coaches will sling to us, sort of thing. And the atmosphere is very relaxed. We got out onto the county ground. We kept our usual routines, half an hour of football warm up. I know a lot of coaches listening in aren't going to agree with that, rolled ankles and things. But no, we tried to keep things as sort of normal as we could, to be honest. We don't want to change anything just because we're playing at the county ground. But obviously, for a lot of us, myself included, first time playing at the county ground, it was a great experience.
And moving on to the toss. So I've played in a couple of these games where the toss is pre-arranged and Somerset would already decide that they wanted to have a bat. Was that the case in this game?
No. It's quite funny, actually. We were going to bowl because we weren't sure if that was technically the right thing to do or not.
Yeah.
But Somerset won the toss and had no hesitation in batting first.
So you were going to have a bowl, were you? Even though the conditions as they were?
Yeah. We basically, me and Godfrey chatted before the game, and we decided we were going to bowl first. That's the way we went with that one.
You might have been a little bit unpopular with the bowlers if you'd won the toss and bowled first on a day like that.
yeah, exactly.
Well, with the ball in hand, as it panned out, it went as well as I'd imagine you could have hoped. I mean, after 16 overs, Somerset was 62 for three, thanks to wickets from Rob Much, Ben Ellis and Craig Johnson. Barring Tommy Sturgis limping off, which must have been a bit of a worry at the time, I would imagine you were pretty delighted with that start.
Yeah, we were really pleased with it, to be honest. The wicket was good, you know, as you'd expect at the county ground. There was a small boundary towards the far side of the ground, probably about 50, 55 yards. And obviously with the heat as well. So those factors, we were really thinking. I remember saying to the lads before we went out, you know, guys, if we can keep them under 300, that's got to be our target. That, you know, that's an achievable target under, we've done really well. So, Rob Much on debut came in and bowled fantastically well, especially in that early spell. I think he only went for about 13 or 14 runs off his first seven overs.
Yeah.
And for someone on debut, that's really impressive. Ben Ellis, to be honest, he's been a really good pick this year. Ben actually came in as a last-minute call-up away at Herefordshire. We had a pull-out due to injury last minute on Saturday night before the Herefordshire game. And I actually rung Ben Ellis from our hotel in Hereford. He was still down at St Just at the time. This was about 7:45, 8 o'clock, because I'd finished early. And he had no hesitation in jumping in his car and driving 4 hours up the A30 and on to Herefordshire. And, you know, that's the type of commitment you want. And ever since that game, I think he came in on debut and did really well. And he's never looked back, really. He's done really well, which is pleasing. And moving on from him, Craig Johnson, you know, similar situation. He's come in this year for his first year and done really well for us. He's been reliant with the ball, doesn't bowl many bad balls, and that showed again on Tuesday.
And I noticed that you mentioned the short boundary. I noticed that you had sweepers on both sides of the wicket pretty early on, almost from ball one. I can't quite remember, but was that a very deliberate plan to try and prevent boundaries and frustrate Somerset as much as possible?
Yeah, obviously on that ground, you know yourself, if you beat the fielder, it's generally four. So what we tried to do as best we can is we tried to, you know, cut off the boundaries as early as we can. And we felt that worked, especially early in their innings. And like you said, we were fortunate enough to keep picking up wickets on a regular basis. And that managed to just stifle them a little bit.
So 62 for three, then a pretty dangerous partnership formed between Cornwall's own Lewis Goldsworthy and George Thomas. They put on 98 in just over 16 overs, sorry, before Scott Kello had Lewis Goldsworthy caught by Craig Johnson for 59. Were you beginning to get a little bit worried at any point during that partnership?
To be honest, like, their team's stacked with decent batters, and you just feel that any one of them can sort of go on when they want. And it wasn't necessarily that partnership, but as Lewis sort of got into his innings, and the young lad Thomas as well, he was a big boy, and I remember saying to him, "How old are you?" And he was 17, but he was certainly built, had stature of a man a lot older than 17 years old, and certainly the way he hit the ball as well. He actually reminded me a lot of that the young lad Will Smead that Somerset have signed, the way he hit the ball and the way he went about his innings. What we tried to do is rotate the bowlers as much as we could so they didn't get settled. But on that wicket to break that partnership, it was a brilliant catch from Craig down at third man. He ran in 3 or 4 yards and then actually took the catch diving forward, which wasn't a straightforward catch. So again, a big turning point in their innings.
Yeah, and then Scott Kellow took a wicket to bring Jamie Baird to the crease to join George Thomas, who was 42 not out at that point. Baird didn't last long. He was run out by Scott Kellow for just 6 to leave the score 176 for 5. Then the big one, I think, George Thomas was stumped by yourself off the bowling of Craig Johnson for 68. The score at that point was 197 for 6 from 40.2 overs. On reflection, firstly, how bad a shot was that from George Thomas in the circumstances? And secondly, how important was that wicket in the grand scheme of things?
Yeah, that was obviously a big one. And like I said, we were just trying to take it. We just kept saying every wicket we took, just keep picking them up, lads, keep picking them up. Because we knew if we kept picking the wickets up, they wouldn't be able to push on in the last sort of 8 or 10 overs. Because you always feel against a quality side like Somerset, if they've got wickets in hand, you know, the last 8 or 10 overs, they really could hurt you 12, 15 and over. And especially with that short boundary. George Thomas, the way he was sort of attacking and hitting the ball, I'm not quite sure of his strike rate, but the shot he played didn't really surprise me. It was just lovely to pick his wicket up, to be honest.
Yeah. And what were you thinking at that point? Because you mentioned before the innings that you would have taken anything under 300, but at 197 for 6 with 10 to go, what were you telling the team and what were you aiming for? Did you have a score in mind?
I think we stuck with the initial score that we said at the start, to be honest, because like I said, Somerset are such a good quality side that you never know who's really going to come in next. And even an 8 or 9 for a side like them can still take the game away from you. So we were clear in our bowling plans that we wanted to be hit to our boundary fielders at the death in the last 10 or 15 overs. And I really did feel that our bowlers executed that. There was a couple of catches, you know, I touched on Craig Johnson's catch, but also Ollie Westbury took a catch to get rid of the dangerous Ben Green. And again, that wasn't a straightforward catch. You know, reviewing that game, those two catches could have quite easily gone down on another day. And fortunately for us, we held on to those catches.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, the guys did a terrific job of restricting Somerset. So Tommy Sturgis and Rob Much bowled the last 5 overs and they conceded just 31 runs and took 4 wickets. It's immaterial now, isn't it? A win's a win, but it must have been quite nice to have also bowled Somerset out.
Yeah, it was. We weren't really thinking that at the halfway break, obviously, because we were just thinking about batting. But when the game's done and you start reflecting, actually to bowl them out, like you said, is quite an achievement, really. And he bowled a couple of overs and you might have seen on the live stream the first over. I remember taking a couple of balls and Smithy was stood next to me at slip. And I said to Smithy, I said, he's bowling quick today. And me and Smithy took 3 large steps back. and he, I don't know if you saw as well, he hit Sam Young on the gloves and it just flew straight over my head. And I think it went for 1 bounce 4. And me and Smithy were quite surprised. And we felt that if Tommy got his tail up, you know, he's a dangerous bowler on his day. So unfortunately for him, he rolled his ankle. And I've got to be honest on that point, I was thinking, blimey, we've just sort of lost our strike bowler within the first 5 overs. This could be a really long day. But how it turned out, Tommy actually came back on and his ankle had swollen up and he come back on and he said, you know, I'm not sure I can bowl again. I'm not sure I can bowl again. And then in the middle, he did actually come back on and bowl another couple of overs and he was struggling. I think he popped a couple of paracetamols. I'm not sure if I'm going to be in trouble for putting this live. And then at the end, again, you know, there was a couple of overs that they sort of got on top of us. And I said to Tommy, do you fancy coming back on? And there was no hesitation from him. He just took the ball in his hand and bowled another 2 overs at the death. And like you said, you got to take your hat off to him, really, because he sent me a picture yesterday, and his ankle's, I'm not sure he'll be playing much cricket this weekend anyway.
Well, it was the way he did it as well was a comedy of errors, because it was a free hit. So he was backtracking to take this catch off a free hit that wouldn't have been out anyway. He dropped the catch and then rolled his ankle.
Yeah. The boys haven't stopped ripping him for that, to be honest. And I don't think they're going to for a while.
Before we move on, a quick run through of the bowlers' figures. So Ben Ellis, 10 overs, 1 maiden, 1 for 54. Tommy Sturgis, 6 overs, no maidens, 1 for 39. Rob Much, 9.4 overs, 1 maiden, 4 for 30. Craig Johnson, 10 overs, no maidens, 2 for 43. Ellis Whiteford, 8 overs, no maidens, none for 60. Scott Kellow, 5 overs, no maidens, 1 for 30. Obviously, all the bowlers contributed in their own way, of course, but let's just talk about Rob Much and Craig Johnson, because their combined figures were 19.4 overs, 1 maiden, 6 for 72. Those two were hugely important, weren't they?
Yeah. Yeah, yeah. There's no getting away from that. Those boys bowled really well. Like you said, like we said all along, the conditions were stacked in the batsman's favour. And considering one of those guys is on debut, you know, you've got to applaud that performance. But I think it's a little bit bigger than that as well. Those boys really did stand up. But I think it was a whole team performance. You know, you're playing against Somerset on their ground on a sweltering hot day. You've lost the toss. To say, you know, to put the cricket in term, you could be chasing leather. I think that's quite an understatement, really. But the way the boys kept the atmosphere up, you know, they fielded sublimely well. It was just a really, really good team performance.
And we can't finish talking about Cornwall's bowling innings without mentioning extras. Cornwall conceded just 7 extras compared with Somerset's 33. As it panned out, that was pretty crucial, wasn't it?
Yeah, definitely. We sort of said on reflection as well that the extras that Somerset gave us early on in our innings, it basically meant that Ollie and Charlie didn't have to take much risk, because they were batting really well, and with those extras on top just meant that they could keep ticking the scoreboard over.
And you had a tidy day behind the stumps as well, 0 byes, which for a keeper is always a really nice feeling. But you know as well as I do that the byes column can be influenced by how well the bowlers bowl. So in a way, that goes to show just how well they did bowl.
Yeah, they definitely did bowl well. It was a collective effort, and we were really pleased with that.
So midway through the game, you need 261 to win. Thoughts and feelings in the changing room at that point? Quietly confident? What were you telling the lads?
Quietly confident, but again, you've got to go back to the point that you're playing against a first-class team stacked with a lot of good players, and including Jack Leach as well. So quietly confident that we have got the batting to do the job, but we knew it was never going to be easy. I remember saying to the boys, you know, good luck, just stay in the game. I did mention to the lads that if we're 40 for 4, the game's probably gone. So we knew we had to set a foundation if we were going to have any chance.
So that was the game plan, was it? Just set a platform, take the game as deep as you possibly could and not lose the game within the first 10 overs.
Yeah, exactly that. Exactly that. And I think for the first time this year, I've certainly been really confident in our top order, setting that platform. And it's not just in one day cricket. We've already only obviously had 1 3-day match so far. But in that game, I was really pleased with the top order, the way we were sort of going about our innings and constructing that. You know, we're looking to set a foundation early with the power coming in later on in the innings. And, you know, with the guys we've got coming in down the order, we've got some real power players that can really change a game.
Well, you yourself scored at a runner ball, but we'll get onto that because that's perhaps a little bit out of character. similar to the bowling innings, you couldn't have dreamed for a much better start with the bat. So Oliver Westbury was out for 26, caught Lewis Goldsworthy bowled Jack Leach with the score on 77 from 15.3 overs. As we said, that was a brilliant platform for you and the rest of the team to build on. You then walk out to bat. So what are you telling yourself as you're walking out to bat? What was your game plan?
I was just trying to keep it as simple as possible, to be honest, Tails. It was just looking, you know, to watch the ball and play really straight. And I just remember thinking, blimey, there's quite a big crowd here, actually. And I was looking around thinking, I'm not used to this. But then, early on, I did feel a bit scratchy, to be honest, but I just tried to get off strike as much as I could. I came in and obviously was straight in facing Jack Leach. So I could see he was putting a lot of revs on the ball. I was just trying to hit him through mid on and just trying to drop him in on the leg side to get off strike as quick as I could, to be honest. He did hit me on the pad, I think, quite early on, but luckily for me, it was going down leg.
Looks quite close, that.
Yeah, it felt quite close to me. But, luckily, I was given not out. But just on Ollie and Charlie, you know, they batted superbly well. I remember Godfrey coming to saying to me after about five overs, I think we had 30 something on the board, and he said, "Well, if these guys can bat for another 5 or 10 overs, they've, you know, done really well," and exactly that's what they did.
Yeah, I've never seen Charlie Kent bat, but I was well impressed, I must be honest. I mean, he looks a little bit nervous getting going, but then as he got into his innings, he was suddenly pumping seamers straight back down the ground and through extra cover. But before we move on, it's worth mentioning that Jack Leach, who you touched on there, he dismissed Ollie Westbury with just the fifth ball of his spell. That could have caused some panic within the changing room, but from there on out, you guys negotiated the England spinner really well. So he finished with figures of 10 overs, 1 for 33, which are tidy figures, don't get me wrong, but they weren't as destructive as he perhaps could have been. I'm guessing it was a deliberate tactic just to knock him round as best you can.
Yeah, exactly that. We obviously knew, you know, the calibre of player he is, and we just felt if he could bowl, even if he bowls 10 overs, 1 for 20, 10 overs, 1 for 25, he's not going to totally ruin the game for us. But we knew it, you know, if he took 4 or 5 wickets, then all of a sudden he's really taken a foothold in the game. So that was definitely the game plan facing him, and that's what we tried to do, just tried to knock him around as best we could, and then capitalize on any bad balls, which he didn't really bowl any bad balls. But
and you and Charlie Kent then put on 77 before he was dismissed by opening bowler Sonny Baker for 60. At that stage, Cornwall were 149 for 2 from 29.4 overs. Kean Burns walked out to join you. You were 42 not out at that stage, and Cornwall required another 112, a shade over 5.5 and over. So what were your thoughts at that stage? What were you telling Kean Burns? Were you still quietly confident?
I was quietly confident because I knew it was a good wicket. And Kean's a destructive player. All I said to him was just watch the ball. You know, he's a young lad. He hasn't played a lot of cricket at this level, but he's certainly got the ability to play a lot of cricket at this level. So I just tried to keep it simple for him and just told him to just watch the ball. And he ended up actually batting very well. He hit some nice shots. He was unfortunate the way he got out, hit a nice six over the leg side. But yeah, we were quietly confident, definitely.
Well, I think it's fair to say that Cornwall had a bit of a wobble then, losing their next two wickets, Kean Burns and Paul Smith, in pretty quick succession to leave you 180 for 4 from 35.1 overs, with a further 81 still required. Scott Kellow then joins you and you're 63 not out at this stage. Knowing you as I do, you would have been thinking this before the innings had even begun. But at that point, was it absolutely clear in your mind that for Cornwall to win, you needed to be there at the end?
Yeah, it was quite clear. I had a bit of a wobble myself, I must admit, where I think either Jack Leach was bowling or Casey Aldridge was bowling. And I sort of had about a 10 ball spell where I felt under pressure to score a boundary. And then I think I played a couple of loose shots. And then I remember sort of saying, you know, if I get out now, we might not quite make it. But yeah, if I can sort of be there with about 10 overs to go, we're going to get quite close. And Scott Kellow as well, when he came in, he was fired right up for it, which was just brilliant. You know, another lad who hasn't played a lot of cricket at that level, but has got the potential and ability to play a lot more. And, he, you know, his passion, his desire, you saw that in the way he fielded and the way he bowled. It was exactly the same when he batted.
Yeah, well, I was going to say he made a vital 28 from 31 balls, and that was absolutely what you and the team needed, given you were probably struggling with the heat at that stage as well. And when he departed, the score was 248 for 5, so 13 required from just over 5 overs. On reflection, and looking from the outside in, that's a pretty straightforward equation, but it never seems that way out in the middle, does it?
No, it doesn't. It doesn't. It was quite funny, and it's strange how your mind plays games with you, isn't it? Because when we were about needing about 60 to win, I started thinking, blimey, I think we can do this, you know? And then I was like, no, Scott, don't get carried away. So sort of like, just talking to myself. And then it was 50, and then it was 40. And when we started getting down to about 30 or 40 to win, you could start hearing a few Cornish fans in the crowd, which was really nice. It just made it, you know, it just made it that much sweeter. There was a lot of boys that made the trip up, the Callington lads that come every game, but there were others as well. And like you said, the closer we got, the louder the Cornish support got.
Yeah, well, it's funny you say that, because I was watching the live stream, and the commentator said, oh, we've had tens of thousands of people tuning into the stream today. It's so nice to see that we've got so many Somerset fans. And I thought, well, that's half of Cornwall tuning in. That's not Somerset fans.
Yeah, definitely. Definitely. We had a lot of Cornish fans there, which was good. It was brilliant.
And in amongst all this, we should probably mention that Somerset's opening batter, Eddie Byram, bowled three overs of really, really ordinary leg spin, conceding 27 runs. They even said on comms that he doesn't bowl for his Taunton club side when he plays for them. Were you surprised that he bowled and Lewis Goldsworthy didn't?
I was surprised, but we knew that Lewis, I think, was being rested for this game in terms of bowling. So that was the reason why he didn't bowl. And thankfully for us as well, that they did rest him, because that allowed us to sort of get into Byram a little bit and just try and get that rate down a little bit.
Yeah. So 13 required from just over five overs. And we've got to talk about this. When Tommy Sturgis joined you, you were 93 not out. Tommy smashed three fours and made 13 from seven balls to win the game at a canter. You didn't score another run. So was there any discussion with Tommy about maybe knocking it around, getting you on strike and giving you a crack at getting your 100?
Let's be honest. Tommy owes me a pint, doesn't he? No, to be honest, in all seriousness, I know it's easy to say now, but I wasn't actually thinking about the 100. I was just so conscious about getting the boys over the line, doing the job, you know, getting us home. And I just knew how much it would mean to the team, to Cornish people, to, you know, Cornish guys that follow cricket. And I just really wanted to get us over the line. There's been a lot of games where we haven't quite got there or this, that and the other. And I just wanted to do that. So although the 100 would have been, you know, the cherry on the cake, it was all about the win for me.
And when Tommy did carve that one over backward point to win the game, describe your emotions, because I was watching on the live stream. The helmet came off. The gloves came off. the big fist pump.
Yeah, I didn't really know what to do. And seeing as I was so tired, I couldn't really cartwheel around the square. But yeah, the fist pump came out. It was a brilliant, brilliant feeling. Could hear all the balcony, you know, screaming with cheer, and the Cornish fans were up and applauding. It was certainly a memory that will live long.
And what was the changing room like immediately after when you got back?
Yeah, it was brilliant. It was brilliant to see the boys' faces. Everyone was so pleased. It was just incredible, really.
And you had a bit of an incident in the changing room, though, didn't you? Do you want to tell the listeners about that?
Well, I don't really want to tell them, but seeing as you've asked me, I feel like I've got to. We changed in the suites, so, you know, the boxes. So they're all glass-fronted, aren't they? And throughout the day, the sun was beaming in there. It was extremely hot. It was probably a little bit hotter in those suites where we were changing than it was actually out on the field. When I got back, I was drinking a lot of water throughout the day. When I got back to the changing rooms, I was told that we couldn't have a shower, which because of COVID, which really wasn't ideal, considering I was sat sort of in my playing kit feeling like I'd had a shower with my clothes on. Yeah. It really wasn't ideal. But so I just sat there for a while and I was feeling okay. The lads, we hung around for a good hour and a half after the game, just reminiscing and taking it all in. We had pictures. It was brilliant. It was brilliant for the lads. And then everyone sort of started dispersing. So I thought, well, I've got to start making a move as well. And I started getting changed. And then all of a sudden, I just started not feeling very well at all. My head was spinning and my eyes were going fuzzy. And I thought, this is not good. And there was only like two or three of the lads left. And yeah, before I knew it, I'd thrown up all over Somerset's suite, which wasn't ideal. And I had my head in the sink throwing up again. So I was, struggling, to be honest, mate.
So a Somerset County Cricket Club sending you the bill for deep cleaning their suite.
Yeah, I think so, yeah.
And how are you feeling now? Are you fully recovered?
Yeah, I'm absolutely fine now, mate. Thanks. The Somerset physio saw to me, and then the lads waited, and all good now.
Good man. Well, Cornwall's a proud county, isn't it? And we talked about the support that you guys had there. And we love to see our county sides do well. So I got in touch with two of Cornwall's former captains, Tom Sharp and Matt Robbins. Do you want to hear what they had to say about it all?
Yeah, I'd love to, yeah.
Okay, well, Matt Robbins, who of course led Cornwall to their first one-day trophy, he said, "I just want to say a big well done to Scott and the team for their superb win at Somerset. It's great to see a young wave of Cornwall players taking over from us veterans." Now, I think Min's being a bit harsh on himself, calling himself a veteran, by the way, although he's pretty much been a constant in the Cornwall side since he was 16. Anyway, he went on to say, "To see Cornwall make history and beat a first-class county for the first time shows what a great place Cornish cricket is in. I was really chuffed watching the game on the live stream, and to see everyone's responses on social media shows just how much support Cornwall has. The future is certainly bright for Cornish cricket." And I also spoke to Tom Sharp, obviously captain of Cornwall's 2012 championship-winning side. Incidentally, you can hear Tom and Godfrey Furze relive that season in episode 2 of the podcast, so be sure to check that out if you're interested. Tom had this to say: "Cornwall's convincing win over Somerset," I love the use of the word convincing there, by the way, "was all the more special given that Cornwall were fielding a relatively inexperienced team and Somerset had plenty of first team experience in theirs. Scott must take huge credit for firstly marshalling the team so expertly in the field and restricting Somerset to a gettable total, and secondly, for leading by such brilliant example with the bat. The result will only have a galvanising effect on the team for the rest of the season." How does that make you feel, hearing those lovely comments from two legends of Cornish cricket?
Oh, yeah, it's just astonishing, really, mate, to be honest. I mean, like you said, two Cornish cricket legends. You couldn't be more right, could you, Sharpie, and, of course, Minnie as well. To hear their words is just brilliant. It just tops off the day, really, to be honest.
And from my own perspective, I was so chuffed with the result for a few reasons, and feel free to interrupt me with your own thoughts. But one, and we spoke about this with Jake Libby on the pod, actually, it proves that the standard of minor counties cricket is more than decent and really can and should be a viable pathway into the professional game for aspiring cricketers. I think pro academies and second 11 cricket isn't necessarily the be all and end all. You guys were every bit the more professional looking outfit and outperformed Somerset in all facets of the game, in my opinion. Two, it showed a complete lack of an inferiority complex. So Tom Sharp said on the pod that part of his job when he took over the Cornwall captaincy in the early 2000s was to eradicate an inferiority complex. So an attitude of, well, they must be better than us because they play in that part of the country or they play for that particular team. There was quite clearly none of that on display, which was so great to see. And third, I hope it makes Somerset sit up and take notice of the talent that there is in Cornish cricket. Because for years and years, when I was younger, it was always Devon that acted as the main feeder county for Somerset, while Cornish players were perhaps sometimes overlooked. I know that's improving and has improved massively in recent years. Lewis Goldsworthy is, of course, the best evidence of that. But I hope this result really helps accelerate that relationship and, fingers crossed, leads to some opportunities for some of the guys. Do you know of any of the guys that have had a conversation with some of the Somerset staff?
Yeah, Tails, not directly conversations, but what I would say is that there were eight guys in the team on Tuesday that were under the age of 25. And I bet if you added up their caps of Cornwall, they were respectively low as well, which just proves the youth in our side coming through and the talent that we've got. Any upcoming aspiring young cricketers in Cornwall would hopefully look at that and think, you know, we're not too far off that if we keep working hard and training and putting results in. We're not far away from that. So hopefully that's given some of the young cricketers some inspiration.
Absolutely. And looking ahead, you've got another massive game coming up, Devon at Truro in the three-day championship. You couldn't have asked for better preparation, really, could you?
No, we definitely couldn't have asked for better preparation. We were bitterly disappointed this year not to qualify for the one-day trophy, knocked out on net run rate. Arguably, we should have won, you know, a game more and left it in our hands. But unfortunately, we didn't quite get through on run rate. What I would say on that is that we'll learn a lot from this year, not qualifying, and we'll take it into next year. And that will certainly be our aim going forward.
And this is a bit of a no-brainer, but we've heard from Matt Robbins and Tom Sharp, but you'd love to win some silverware of your own, wouldn't you, with Cornwall?
Oh yeah, definitely, definitely. That's obviously the pinnacle for Cornish cricket. You know, I was lucky enough to play in the 2015 team, and you know what I'm talking about, as you yourself played in the 2012 team, and nothing beats winning a national title for a Cornish cricketer, in my opinion.
No, you're absolutely right. Moving on to our quickfire round. So, best Cornish batter you've played with, and then best Cornish batter you've played against.
Played with Tom Sharp, played against Dave Roberts.
Yeah, why those two?
Tom Sharp just numerous times had class innings, won games from positions that we would never had the right to win. One of my favourite innings from Tom was his semi-final innings up at Hertfordshire, 40 for 4 chasing 280, and he got 140 not out and saw the boys home. It was just phenomenal.
And that was the semi-final of the 2015 one-day trophy that we would go on to win.
Yeah, that's it. And I've got to mention that on that, the semi-final from the position we were in was almost, although you can't beat winning a final, it was almost the semi-final nicer than the final, in my opinion, because we were so far out, down and out in that game. And it took a remarkable innings from Sharpie and well supported by Gavin to get us over the line. As it turned out, the final we actually won at a canter, really. I think with about 15 overs to go. So,
And then Dave Roberts, I mean, he has been the most popular choice for all of our listeners. And if I was to ever interview myself, Dave Roberts would be my choice. So what is it about Dave that made you choose him?
When I came down to Cornwall, I only played against Dave a few times because he was sort of at back end of his career when I moved down to Cornwall. But when I did play against him, he was always someone who you knew you needed to get out early, because if you didn't get him out in those first 10 overs, he could just take the game away from you. It didn't matter who was bowling at him. He always seemed to have so much time when he was batting.
Yeah, and he could take the game away from you without taking any risks, it seemed, or hitting the ball in the air, which was just remarkable. Best Cornish bowler played with and best Cornish bowler played against?
Cornish bowler played with, I'll say, Neil Ivamy. And best bowler played against, I would say, Justin Stevens.
So you've gone for Neil Ivamy rather than Tom Sharp as the spinner.
Can't give him both awards, mate.
And what is it about Ivers that makes you choose him?
Ivers is, you know, when he's on it, again, he's a left-arm spinner. I never really saw him get hit much. He bowled overs and overs for Cornwall when I was just starting. You know, he'd bowl sides out. If we could just control the other end, he'd bowl sort of 30, 35 overs and innings. And, remarkable bowler.
Yeah, and bowled at a really awkward pace as well, didn't he? Best thing about playing cricket for Cornwall?
I think we've touched on this one already, but for me, playing for Cornwall cricket is just the support and everything that you get from all the Cornish cricket fans. You know, that's been an example this Tuesday. Absolutely flooded with messages, calls, WhatsApps. It's such a tight-knit community, as you know yourself, Taylor, that just everybody wants you to do well. And when you do win, everybody enjoys it with you, and you can't really replace that. You know, I played for Suffolk when I was 16, 17, and it was just nothing like it is in Cornwall. Even people that have grown up and moved out of the county, they still follow Cornish cricket. They still want you to do well. And I just think on that, you can't replace it.
I definitely agree with that one. And best thing about playing cricket in Cornwall?
Yeah, probably similar. I mean, the grounds are lovely down in Cornwall, but also you make good friends. You always have hard games on the field. Look at St Just, always play the game really hard, but off the field you enjoy a few beers after and, you know, you make good mates with them.
Absolutely, yeah. And this is perhaps a bit of an obvious one, given what's gone on this week, but favourite memory in a Cornwall shirt?
Favourite memory? I've got two, if you don't mind.
The first yeah, go one, for it.
First one is 2015 One Day Trophy. It was an absolutely brilliant season, first and foremost. But to get that trophy, that was a real highlight. And then obviously Tuesday as well, first time Cornwall have beaten a first-class county on their ground. Brilliant.
Yeah, that's two pretty good memories. And that brings us to the end of the podcast, mate. So all that's left for me to say is thank you for joining us and huge congratulations again.
Thanks very much, Taylor. It's been a pleasure, mate.
All right. Cheers, mate. Thank you.
Cheers. Bye-bye.
Well, what a win it was against Somerset, a day that will live long in the memory for those Cornish players and all Cornish cricket fans. And a day that will be penned into the history books, the first time that Cornwall's beaten a first-class county. I'm sure it won't be the last, especially after seeing and hearing more about the young talent that Cornwall has at its disposal. Let's hope that this win acts as a springboard for not only improving the county side and winning silverware, but also producing more Cornish first-class cricketers. As always, thanks so much for listening. We'll be back in a couple of weeks' time. In the meantime, be sure to check out the Whitefoot Cricket Show on social media, leave a rating on Apple Podcasts if that's where you're listening, and get in touch with us with any feedback you might have. It's always very, very welcome. Until next time, cheers and go well.